Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Great call right before the break from a caller from Seattle who was wondering about the viability of athletic departments. Utah did something to help stave off financial troubles. Josh Newman covers Utah for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us now. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Give us an idea of sort of the, you know, the landscape, the finances inside the athletic department at Utah and what the Utes are doing.
Yeah, so I think in the back of our minds in this market, we all knew that, you know, look, Pac-12 athletic department, Power 5 athletic department, if football is not played, there were going to be some dire financial ramifications. That turned out to be, you know, they're projecting now somewhere in the neighborhood of between 50 and 60 million in losses if football is not played during this fiscal year. You know, they started by lopping off, I think it was 8 million off their operating budget. That got a little worse, again, with the $50 to $60 million projection. And, you know, the answer that they've come up with, which is kind of smart, in my opinion, they're not just furloughing the big money people. It's not just Larry Kostolbiak and Kyle Whittingham and athletic director Mark Harlan. Everybody in the department is getting furloughed. Some people are getting furloughed for 1 or 2 weeks. Some people are getting furloughed totaling, you know, 6, 7, or 8 weeks. So everybody's chipping in. Everybody in that department, which is over 200 people, everybody has to deal with it. And hopefully, you know, they can come out the other side of this thing not in super financial dire straits. There's going to be some trouble no matter what happens here. But hopefully with everybody pitching in, it's not going to be as bad once we get to the other side of this thing.
Utah's athletic director, Mark Harlan, I think he does a really good job and sort of casts a inspiring presence at the top of the athletic department. He's talking about $60 million if football isn't played. It looks like they will play football because of the rapid results testing. Is that a sigh of relief in Utah and in other places?
Oh, 100%. Everybody I've spoken with, at least lately, around Utah is definitely feeling a sense of relief. Since the rapid response testing, because, you know, as we've all been talking about, you know, the rapid response testing is going to allow us to have football. Now, whether that happens in, you know, November or January or February, big picture, that really doesn't matter. You know, financially, the bottom line is there's going to be football. And yes, there is, you know, there is a sense of relief. You know, what the ultimate financial stuff looks like with a November or January football season, we don't know what the finances look like because, you know, how many games do you let fans in some capacity? What does the TV money look like with this truncated, you know, winter season? But, you know, there is optimism that, you know, that 50 to 60 million projection is going to be, you know, lessened as long as there is some football played.
Basketball gets lost in this conversation, and I want to talk about it a little bit. Could they play in a bubble? Will they get started before football? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I've written about this pretty extensively lately. They will play basketball, you know, especially now with the rapid response testing. I think, as Larry Scott has said, as, you know, as Doug Aukerman has said, it's a game changer. It's going to allow you to test kids, you know, quickly, efficiently, doing it the right way. I do think we're going to play basketball. Not only that, I do think when the NCAA announces their start date next week, you know, regardless of what it is, November 25th is on the table. You're starting to hear some rumblings about like November 23rd. The Pac-12 is going to back off their January 1st mandate. And I think that they're going to be in a position to be able to play when everybody else starts playing in November. A bubble, it's been made pretty clear that, you know, the Pac-12 hierarchy and Mark Harlan, there isn't really an appetite for a true, you know, NBA style bubble where you're putting student athletes and staff in a real bubble environment for, you know, 3 or 4 months. Now, I do think that there is some momentum towards maybe some sort of a weekend pod system, right? Where you take, you know, you take four teams, you put them on a campus, you let them play each other, you know, so that's 3 games over the course of 4 or 5 days. I think that there's real momentum for that. So you're going to get the Pac-12 schedule played, you know, regardless of its, you know, 18, 20, you know, if they extend beyond that, maybe 22 or 24 games. The Pac-12 will play conference basketball. I think the bigger hurdle is going to be, how do you get a non-conference schedule played? Like, look, Utah is supposed to go to Battle for Atlantis, which is a huge non-conference event around Thanksgiving, highly critical to their NCAA tournament resume. Nobody's going to the Bahamas, but can you get that event played somewhere in the United States on the mainland? I think the non-conference stuff is going to be a much bigger question than whether or not you can get conference games played.
Josh Newman, our guest, University of Utah beat writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. Follow him on Twitter, @Joshua_Newman. Great follow. The Ohio State fans are freaking out. The head football coach is, you know, taking a blowtorch to the conference. Kyle Whittingham has been very quiet. At least I haven't heard much of what he has to say. How is he chomping at the bit? Is he fully supporting the Pac-12's decision to postpone? Where is his head?
That's a great question. He really hasn't said much. You know, we got him, I think it was right after the August 11th announcement that, you know, the Pac-12 was postponing. Look, he's a lifelong football guy. He's a football guy in every sense of the word. Of course, he's chomping at the bit. I think if you're a player, you know, the players want to play, the coaches want to coach. Of course, you'd like to start now, immediately. But I think, you know, Kyle Whittingham, and not only Kyle, but also Mark Harlan, no matter what their personal feelings are, they remain very even-keeled, and they are willing to go, you know, with the Pac-12. They're willing to go with the majority, and they're, you know, they're not making any waves. You know, you're not seeing a situation like, you know, where Ryan Day, as you put it, put a blowtorch to the Big Ten. Everybody around here is very even-keeled, and they're willing to wait, and they're willing to be patient. And the one thing that I've said, you know, consistently, and I still feel this way, I think the University of Utah, you know, the leadership on down has gone about these things, you know, the right way in a safe and prudent manner the entire time since mid-March. And now that we're, you know, we're not on the doorstep, right, of playing football, but there is new optimism. So being that we're in mid-September and we seem to be at least getting somewhat close to playing football, Utah is not going to back off that stance. They're going to, you know, keep going with the majority, keep going with the league, and hopefully eventually here we're going to get to some football.
I have a theory on why there isn't a Ryan Day type person leading a program in the Pac-12. I think, for one, I think the Pac-12 is a little different conference. I think we've learned that, you know, they do see the student when they say student athlete. And at least the presidents and the chancellors do. And then the other thing is, I think that the conference, as much as I've criticized them, I think the conference did a pretty good job kind of communicating why they made the decision they made. And they left the coaches in a position where they either had to go along with it or come out and sort of be against the science and the data. You agree with that?
I do agree with that. And look, as you know, I haven't been out here very long, right? I've been out here 9 months. I'm a native Northeasterner, so I'm still learning about the intricacies and the hierarchy of the Pac-12. But, yeah, I think you're right. Look, the Pac-12 made a decision, but what they did differently than what the Big Ten did is that the Pac-12 was transparent, and they put their medical people forward, and they answered questions. They were willing to take on, you know, the bad pub. You know, maybe they pulled the trigger too early. They certainly pulled the trigger too early on basketball. But from a football standpoint, yeah, they got crushed a little bit. You know, they're not going to play in the fall, but they were transparent about it, and they let their medical people, you know, speak for themselves. They released all the medical documents. What's it going to take to return to play? And look, that Big Ten decision was obviously very unpopular, and it's still unpopular and Kevin Warren is still getting crushed. But I really believe that even though the Big Ten decision was unpopular, if they were just a little more transparent about it and they were willing to explain themselves and put their medical people up front to explain themselves, I don't think the Big Ten would be getting crushed to the degree that it is right now.
Utah lost a ton of players to the NFL that were talented, especially on the defensive side of the ball in football. Oregon is getting hit right now with players who are opting out. They were a little younger than Utah last year, and now you have three Oregon players who have said where they're opting out of the season altogether. Is that wave hit Utah yet?
That wave has not hit Utah yet, and I really don't know that it's going to, just because you don't have a lot of draft eligible guys on Utah's roster that can realistically go into the NFL draft right now and get picked and make a career of it right now. You know, it's a small handful. You know, Britton Covey has already said that he intends to play out his career at Utah. Jake Bentley, you know, the graduate transfer quarterback from South Carolina, presumed starter if and when we do end up playing, he has indicated that he's not thinking about the NFL draft, wants to play for Utah. And beyond that, a guy like Devin Lloyd, who's a draft eligible linebacker, all Pac-12 type kid, he's one who I could see, you know, maybe making a go of it at the draft now. Brant Keithy, who, you know, was an all Pac-12 tight end for Utah last year, he's another who, yeah, maybe I could see that too. But, you know, this is not a situation like Oregon where you're not going to see a lot of guys here defect. And if you do, it's going to be a very small handful.
You talked about just getting here 9 months ago. You covered Rutgers, as part of your prior life on the East Coast. Rutgers is one of the programs that's talking about, you know, if the Big Ten did push forward, they may not go along with it. They are they're not on board with Ohio State. Is it a different mentality at Rutgers than maybe the rest of the Big Ten?
Yeah, it's a fascinating time still to be, you know, at Rutgers. Well, one, they were probably the worst Power 5 program in the country for the last year or two, just getting manhandled every week by other Big Ten powers, having to deal with the Big Ten East and Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State. And even from there, it's like it's fascinating because now it's Greg Schiano, right, who's coming back home, most popular coach in program history, took them to, 11 wins, the doorstep of the BCS. And now you have this other problem where, you know, they've had some spikes on their football program. I will say, you know, the hierarchy there, kind of like here at Utah's, you know, they're even keeled. They're not going to be talked into anything. They're not going to be in a big rush. But I will say that if you found, and I'm just making this up, if you found, you know, 9 or 10 or 11 Big Ten teams willing to push forward, nobody's going to be waiting around for Rutgers. Like, if Rutgers decides, hey, I'm being honest, we're going to sit this out. We're going to wait until the fall. Everybody else will be like, okay, do your thing. We'll see you next fall. So it was a fascinating time to be at Rutgers. It still is now. It's a fascinating time to be at Utah, too, just coming off what they did last year. A lot of pieces to replace. And I would love to be inside Rice Eccles Stadium for the first time. I've never been inside the press box. So, you know, look, just like Kyle might be chomping at the bit, your friendly neighborhood beat writer is also chomping at the bit.
Josh Newman, University of Utah beat reporter, Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you for your time, man. I appreciate you. A wealth of knowledge.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Great stuff from Utah. I think it's important, too, to get sort of the lay of the land from other parts of the country. Love talking to Josh Newman about that. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Anna's going to be popping in the studio coming up. I do want to take a couple phone calls. We've got some people who want to share their experiences with fire and the smoke. Again, if you're just tuning in, if you're not tuned into the latest reports in your county, you are advised to go to your county's website and view the emergency evacuation maps. Just do it as a casual favor to yours truly. If you're in Clackamas County, if you're in Canby, if you're in Oregon City, those areas have moved to a yellow, which is a get ready call. And for people up and down the I-5 corridor, there are other cities that have evolved into yellow, so I would encourage you to check your county's website. You want to be on alert and not get surprised by this. Mark has called in, and I want to let Mark share his story. Mark, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, Mark.
Oh, wow. Last Halloween, my house burned to the ground. I've lived there for 11 years, had a pretty developed situation, you know, my studio and life and whatnot. And after that sort of happened, I ended up on a farm and took care of animals and started drinking really hard and ended up in rehab, you know, kind of losing it, and tried to pull myself back together. And currently I'm on the Pacific Crest Trail. I'm at Snoqualmie Pass, and I've been just listening to what's happening in Oregon. It sounds like the four horsemen of the apocalypse are coming out of the sky. And I've always been a fan of yours. Not always a positive fan. At first, I kind of hated you, but then some of the more sentimental things that you touch on, you know, your interviews and your sympathies won me over. And I just wanted to let everybody know, if I had a chance, that to just keep your head up. And, you know, there's ultimate things and proximate things. And the things that persevere over time that may not be so tangible or, you know, the most important. And I just wanted to share that experience, I guess.
I appreciate that. And I wish you the best as well, Mark. I hope you're doing better. You sound like you're doing better than maybe you were in the last year or so. Anna's coming into the studio next. I appreciate your perspective, Mark's perspective, and others. Want your phone calls, 503-417-7575. Tell me what it's like where you are. Anna has popped into the studio, and she looks understandably anxious. I was talking to her in the commercial break. I said, listen, I'll just talk to her now again. We don't want to make people anxious, but we want people to be cautious listeners.
Yep.
We don't want to contribute to the anxiety that's already out there when it comes to what's going on in our state. There's smoke everywhere. Some people have lost their homes. There have been lives lost in Southern Oregon. There will be more. And the governor was bracing us all in her statements yesterday for what could be a really bad few days here. The wind has died down. That's a good thing. What have you learned about some of the advancements here in Clackamas County, Multnomah County, and other places?
It just looks like there's more people that are in yellow now than there were yesterday at this time. They were, you know, in green, like, you know, half of Clackamas County now really needs to go or be ready to go or get ready to go at least. And there's just everybody's heading out, you know, like I have friends that are in yellow, but they're trying to get ahead of the crush of people that would be trying to all leave at the same time. So they've booked rooms at area hotels. They're going to relatives' homes in other places, and they're leaving.
I tend to trust the government recommendation here, the ready, set, go.
Mm-hmm.
I think ready is they want people to be on alert. I think set is you better have your stuff packed up and be ready to go at a moment's notice, and then go is go. I think if everybody in yellow suddenly packs up and goes, you're going to have a throng of people on the road that don't belong on the road, and they're telling us to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not. And the other thing is, like, how do we convey information? You did this in the news business for decades. How do you convey information without freaking people out?
Well, you just have to let them know what needs to be known. Like, you know, if you are in green or yellow, now is the time to be getting ready so that you're not last minute rushing around your house trying to grab things that, you know, and forget things that you might want to try to come back for, which you can't or shouldn't. So it just helps to be prepared right now and at least have a plan in place of where you would go, because that's kind of the challenge, is like, where do you go right now? There's fires burning everywhere. The hotel rooms are booking up pretty rapidly, and there's not a lot of places in the state. You know, it is a big state, but when you look at the map, the wildfires are spread out throughout the region, both in Oregon and Washington.
I've had listeners of the show who have emailed or tweeted at me saying that they have been more impacted in the last couple of days by the fires than they were in 7 months from the coronavirus. As you frame those two things, you know, I felt like we had a semblance of control with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
We could stay home.
Sure.
We could wear masks.
Yeah.
We could isolate.
Right.
With the fire, you open the door and it's there.
Right. Well, you don't even have to open the door. Like, it's seeping into your homes and, you know, burning your eyes.
Yeah, I have not seen you anxious like this, you know, and it's the first time I think I've ever in my relationship with you seen you anxious. Is it because we have kids?
Yeah, probably. That probably has to do with it. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I was in the kitchen crying a few moments ago, trying to think of like,
why are you crying?
I don't even know why I'm crying. Okay. I'm just like, I'm in touch with my friends and, you know, family members, and trying to make sure they all have places to go, and trying to, you know, that gather things up, but not freak out the little ones. And you know, our 6-year-old's too smart, so she's like, "Why are you? What's going on?" Like,
she knows.
But you're right. It's just a house. If we had to leave it, then it's just a house, and as long as we have each other, we'll be fine.
And look, the thing that I feel for are the people who live in rural areas that, when there's a fire that is spreading as rapidly as this fire spread, and we're talking about 35 different fires who have all kind of blended together in different ways, but there were people who were trapped, and there's people still missing. And I'm seeing the Facebook posts from people who are saying, "I can't reach my daughter. She's been missing for, you know, a few days, and I haven't heard from her." Last time I heard from her was 6 p.m. on Monday night.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that those people found refuge in pockets of the forest. The people who are camping found refuge in places where, you know, as firefighters pointed out, they're reassuring families, saying that, look, there's some pockets out there that were not affected by the fire that we haven't got to. And some of these people might have been able to get to. But the smoke becomes a big part of this for a lot of people. That smoke is unhealthy.
Yeah.
And it is, it's growing thicker. I can see it out the windows here of the studio. It's different. It's changed during this radio show.
Uh-huh.
And there's no wind, though. And so I'm hopeful that the lack of wind, it's almost still.
Yeah.
The lack of wind combined with the fact that, you know, that the firefighters are out there trying to get containment of these blazes will benefit. You have covered fires. Is it as simple as that? You have been on scene, like feet away from where the fires are burning.
Mm, yeah.
What is it like to be out there in a wildfire?
It's humbling, because you realize that it's its own animal, it's its own beast. It creates its own weather system when it gets intense enough. And, you know, humans can only do so much to try and control it. They can backburn. They, you know, there's flame retardant. There's all kinds of things that we try to do to control it. But when you factor in high winds, you're really at the mercy of the embers that fly and how dry the environment is leading up to that point.
I want your phone calls at 503-417-7575. Tell me what you're going through where you are. Tell me how anxious you are, or maybe give me your perspective with fires. We've had people call in who have been evacuated, people who called in who are in the red zone and yellow zone and different stages of that. I think part of what this show can do is, you know, we got to stick together. We got to be in it together. We are in it together. I want your phone calls. 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but
If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.